Time to talk Macintosh computers and accessories now with Joe Rhodes. Joe is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been working with Macs for many a year now, and I tell you what, he does a great job and a nice job on this program. That's why we asked him back. So he's with us again to talk Macintosh with you. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Joe Rhodes, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell you what, one of the problems I have with my sometimes with my computer is remembering my passwords. And you have a tip.
I do, as a matter of fact. Our Macs are really good about remembering our passwords for us. Like, for example, in our email program, we set it up and there's a little checkbox and you say, remember my password. And that's great because you don't have to type it in each time. Until someday you're on someone else's computer and you go to the web and you think, oh, I'm just going to quick check my email in the web interface, and you type in your username and then you get to the password prompt and you're like, what is it? I don't know. And the fact that our computers remember these passwords can be very helpful and problematic because we don't type it in every day. We don't remember what they are. In Mac OS X, you can actually find out what these saved passwords are. There's this system on Mac OS X called a keychain. And when the computer's on, the keychain has all these passwords, and it very judiciously will hand out these passwords to applications that need them. And when the computer's off, it keeps them all in an encrypted file so that if somebody happens to get that file, they still don't know what your passwords are. We talked a couple times. There's this handy little folder in your applications folder called the utilities folder, and there's all kinds of neat little gems in there. One of them is called keychain access. And you go to keychain access, and you open that up, and it will show you all of the things that you have stored in your keychain, including your email passwords, things like this. And so you'll see a line for each thing on there, and you can double-click on it. Now, it doesn't just dump your password out on the screen for anyone to see, because that wouldn't be very secure. So the keychain access program wants to find out, okay, first, before I show you this super secret password, prove to me that you're really okay to see this password. So what it will do is it'll ask you for a password, ironically enough, and that password is the password for your Mac OS X machine.
Oh.
So when you created your account, you gave a username and a password, and a lot of times you log in automatically, but that's an account that hopefully you know what that password is. So you type in that master password, and it says, okay, this really is Larry Mueller, and here is that password I had saved for your email account, or here's that password I had saved for this web page, or here's that password I had saved.
Man.
So if you ever need to figure out, well, what is my password? I know it's there and it's saved, but I don't remember what it is. You can go into keychain access and go find it.
Excellent. I did not know that.
Most people don't.
That's a great tip. Noah and Racine, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Noah. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Hey, my question was, I had tried out the iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was, you know, just amazing. It really is. However, when I tried doing an email through my phone to another iPhone or sending a picture via email, I couldn't do it. And that was like the first week it had come out. And what I'm wondering is, have they fixed that, you know, or is that a software problem that can be fixed, or
well,
what's going on?
My hunch is that it's probably not so much a problem with the iPhone as, not so much a problem with your iPhone as a problem with the email account. Receiving email is pretty straightforward, but believe it or not, sending email is very tricky because of the whole spam epidemic. So let's say your email account is with, I'm just going to pick one out of the air. Let's say you have an email account with TDS. And so when you're at home, your outgoing mail server, the person that you hand your email to be delivered, is TDS. And TDS will only allow you to hand mail to them. They will not allow you to hand mail to anyone else. And they will not accept mail from anyone else unless you're on their network. That's how they keep other people from just pumping spam through their systems. Well, this is fine on your home computer. On your iPhone, it's a little trickier because your iPhone is on AT&T's network.
Yeah.
So now you have to think, well, what post office can I hand my letter to that they're going to accept it from my iPhone, which is now an AT&T computer, not a TDS computer? Now, they do have systems set up for this, and you might have to do a little digging for this. You'll probably want to avoid – email is traditionally exchanged on a port number or a window, if you will, called port number 25. And that port is very heavily restricted because of the whole spam thing. There are alternate ports that you can use. One is called port 465. And typically, let's say I'm TDS, I would set up port 465, and I would set it up so I will only accept mail if you provide a valid username and password. So that allows customers to use any network they happen to be on. As long as they have a valid username and password, they will accept it. It usually doesn't get blocked. So you'll probably want to check with your internet service provider about who the outgoing mail server should be, because my bet is it's getting blocked, and that's why you can't send email from your iPhone.
Right.
I know this works because I actually had to do a little configuring on my own mail server, and I finally got it, and it got it works, and yeah, it sends mail beautifully. The trick is getting the right outgoing mail server that, and make sure it's, you know, allows you to send mail from wherever you happen to be.
Oh, thanks.
All right.
That actually helps out a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Steve in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Great. Hey, Steve, thanks for calling.
Great. I had a question. We just switched over from using a Microsoft-based computer to an Apple computer about 6 months ago, and we were pretty happy with it. But oftentimes, when my wife is working on the internet or checking or sending emails, the computer will get this spinning colorful wheel.
We'll
freeze the computer for hours at a time. We spent a lot of money. We did some upgrades. We got the iMac 20-inch screen and all the extra memory.
Okay.
And my wife oftentimes just wants to pick it up and throw it out the window. And in the old Windows base, you could use Control-Alt-Delete. And we're wondering, is there a way to kind of fix that without having to unplug the computer and reboot it and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The symptom you're referring to is technically called the spinny wheel of death.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously. No, not really. And my first question, Steve, is what web browser are you guys using? Are you using Internet Explorer?
We are not.
Okay. Are you using Safari?
Safari, that's correct.
Okay. That's weird that it's getting hung up that often. That seems odd. But there is a way that you can kill Safari, because that spinny wheel of death, usually it means the application itself has crashed, but usually the rest of the computer is still operating.
Okay.
And my hunch is that if you took your mouse and you moved it around somewhere else, that spinny wheel will probably change back to a normal cursor. So, for example, if you were to go down your dock and click on the Finder or click on some other application, it should turn back into a normal mouse.
It does not.
It doesn't.
Right. It maintains a solid spinning wheel.
No matter where that goes on the screen.
Right, and the only application that my wife uses other than Safari would be Firefox, I believe.
Okay, yeah. Does Firefox do that also?
Well, because she uses it to pay bills online,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the Safari is not compatible with some of the other online.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
She uses Firefox occasionally, but what occurs is that Wheel of Death spins and spins and spins on any application.
Okay, then in that case, something else is going on. My first thought was, well, maybe Safari got hung up on a page and just didn't like it. And if you could kill Safari, you could just restart it and go on.
Okay.
By the way, the magic key sequence that you're looking for, the Control-Alt-Delete key sequence,
mm-hmm.
it's the Command, also sometimes known as Open Apple. It is the Option, which is right next to it.
Okay.
And the Escape key. If you press those three, you will get a little window that says Force Quit Applications, and it will show you all the applications, and you can click on one and force quit it.
Okay.
Now, the fact that spinny wheel shows up, and it shows up everywhere, not just the Safari application, but it shows up when you're over your dock or you're up in your menu bar or on the desktop, that means the whole computer that spinny wheel is basically the computer's waiting for something to finish, and it can't do anything else until that thing is finished.
Okay.
The fact that you're getting that all over the place, that's not supposed to happen. So my hunch is that you have something else going on besides just a web browser that's being obstinate.
Okay.
I don't know if you've gone and if this is a fairly new Mac, you should be able to call Apple. They've got an AppleCare support line.
Yeah, we haven't paid for that, right? Do you know the number for that?
I don't off the top of my head, but if you go to apple.com/support,
okay.
It should be readily obvious, or it should be in the stuff that you bought. There should be an 800 number.
Okay, great.
I would call them. They're probably going to have you do a reinstallation of Mac OS X because it sounds like something isn't quite right there. Because I've had a web browser lockup, and that's not that uncommon.
Right.
And you just flip to some other application and you go to Force Quit. That Force Quit menu, by the way, is also under the Apple menu.
Okay.
So if you can't remember the key sequence, you can go into the Apple menu and pull down Force Quit, assuming that you have an application that's responding.
Okay.
But yeah, it sounds like something bigger is going on there, and I would probably call Apple and see if they can walk you through some diagnostics.
Okay.
And see if, you know, because you did pay for that support and make use of it.
All right.
Thanks.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. That happened to me once. I just turned the machine off and turned it back on again.
Yeah. A lot of times, if it's just one application, you can flip to some other application,
Pull
down the force quit menu, kill that application, and then just relaunch it and go after it again and see if you get better results.
Victoria in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, how are you guys? Mine is with our modem, internal modem. I have an iMac.
Okay.
And when we try to access the internet, which we have dial-up, yes, we do.
Well, a lot of people, that's the only option.
Anyway, so we can't hook on anymore. It always says there's no dial tone.
Okay.
When we have checked every physical aspect of all the lines and all the plugins and replaced everything to see.
Okay.
And that's not it. So are we, in fact, looking to get it looked at for the internal modem?
Well, the first thing I would check is unplug the cable from the iMac, and you've probably already done this, but plug it into a plain telephone and pick up the handset and see what you get.
Yeah.
And if you've got a dial tone there, then you know everything is good right up to that cable where it goes into the iMac. And if the iMac still says no dial tone, you may have a bad modem. Let me ask you this. How old is the iMac? What kind of iMac is it?
It's the whatever you just mentioned to the last person. Something 10.
I've got a very short memory, yeah.
OS
10?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. What color is your iMac?
It's white.
It's white. Is it the flat one, or is it the larger, kind of looks like a jelly bean? There's one that's real flat. It's like 2 inches thick.
Are you talking about the screen?
Talking about the whole computer. Or is it? Does it look like a desk lamp where there's a half?
Looks like a desk lamp.
Looks like a desk lamp where there's a half base and a kind of a reticulating arm.
Correct.
Okay, so it's possible that, if you have the option, I would try maybe see if you can reinstall Mac OS X, which you can do without obliterating everything that's on there. It's fairly straightforward.
Okay.
Because it could be a software problem, but, with that, my hunch is more likely that maybe a stray lightning surge worked its way up your phone line damaged your modem. Do you know what version of Mac OS X you have?
No. And I'm not home to check, so I'm sorry.
Okay, that's no problem. When you're at home, take a look under the Apple menu. You can say about this Mac, and it'll tell you what version of Mac OS X you have.
All right.
And if you have Mac OS 10.4, you have another option. Rather than having to replace that internal modem, Apple has a little $40 external modem that you can just plug into a USB port, and because their new Macs don't even include modems anymore.
Okay.
But that requires Mac OS 10.4. So if you're running Mac OS 10.4 or you're thinking about doing it, which is it's a nice operating system, you can get this little $40 part. And then even if your internal modem is damaged, why spend the money to get it repaired? Just get this $40 external guy and call it
a
day.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Wonderful.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate your help. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Joe Rhodes, our guest today, Macintosh support specialist in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller talking Macintosh computers and accessories. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking Macintosh computers with Joe Rhodes. Glad to have you listening in. Clyde in Platteville has a question, so let's go to Clyde. Hi there. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm running an iMac running Tiger 10.4.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, how do you find the cookies and deleting those you don't want on there? I'm sure my sons have picked up quite a number of them by now.
Okay. You can't get rid of them individually, but you can get rid of them in bulk.
Okay.
Now, there's two ways of doing this. The drop-dead easy way is kind of like taking a sledgehammer to kill a fly, but it works. If you're in Safari, is that the web browser you use?
Right.
Okay. Under the Safari menu, there is an option that says Reset Safari.
Okay.
And that's going to get rid of your cookies. It's going to get rid of your saved passwords. It's going to get rid of your history. It's going to clean it all out. So, this is the what I sometimes jokingly refer to as the nosy wife option, where it cleans it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't want to, say, get rid of all your saved passwords and your history, because that can kind of be in handy, if you just need to get rid of the cookies, you can do it. It's a little bit more manual. And you go into your home folder.
Okay.
And there is a library folder.
Okay.
And inside of that library folder, you will see a folder called cookies.
Okay.
And you will see a single file. It's called cookie.plist. And throw that guy in the trash and all your cookies are gone.
Okay.
Now, my question is, are you suspicious of your cookie files? Do you think they're doing something ugly?
I think so. I'm catching a lot of the spinning wheel. Some applications, everything's cleaned out except running Safari, yet the spinning wheel sits there forever.
Okay.
So it looks like something else is kicking in.
Well, the cookies don't actually do anything. What the cookies actually do, and there's some confusion about what cookies are and what they do. The cookies just allow, let's say you go to Amazon.com and you're shopping for books and you say, add this book to my shopping cart. How does Amazon.com know the next time you click that button that you're you? And the answer is they give you a cookie and you give them that cookie and it's kind of like an ID tag that shows Amazon.com that, yes, I'm me. And they go find your cart that you've already got and they add your second book to the cart. But when they're sitting on your disk, they don't actually do anything. So if you're getting that spinny wheel in Safari, one of two things have happening, and probably the easiest thing I can do is just a little bit of standard maintenance. It's likely that your cache files maybe are getting a little thick, and sometimes cleaning those out can be helpful.
Okay.
And, you know, we were just talking about that library folder.
Right.
In that same folder, you will find a folder called caches.
Okay.
And everything inside of that folder is expendable.
Okay.
The cache file is basically where your computer stores things that it might need again. And it's kind of like, you know, shorthand for the computer. You know how we write these little post-it notes and we write things on there that make sense to no one else but us? That's kind of what the cache files are. So you can throw all of those away.
Okay.
The stuff inside of the cache folder and just the stuff inside of the cache folder. Restart your computer and see if that helps any. Safari keeps a whole bunch of stuff in there, and sometimes that stuff gets a little weird. You know, if you get too many post-it notes and you can't make head or tails out of them, sometimes you got to throw them all away and start from scratch, and that's kind of what you're doing with that.
Okay, thank you for the advice.
You bet.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Bob in Eau Claire. Bob, hello to you.
Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Great. So, I hope you're not tired of Safari questions because I've got another one too.
Oh, go ahead.
I've got a fairly new iMac with the 10.4.9 OS, and I too find that Safari is the weak link in the chain. I get a lot of spinning wheels of death on it, and I have it crash on me a lot of times too.
Mm-hmm.
And however, I've been using Safari more so than say Firefox.
Okay.
And I have a lot more bookmarks in Safari than I do in Firefox.
Okay.
What I would like to be able to do is to import my Safari bookmarks over to Firefox and spend more time in Firefox and less time in Safari.
Sure. Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly how that is done, but I know that it is possible. Your best bet, I would say, would be go to Google and do a search for, you know, Firefox Safari bookmark import or something along those lines. You kind of throw in a bunch of key phrases there and you should get to an answer fairly quickly.
Okay.
You know, the other thing that might help your Safari situation a little bit, there are some web pages that Safari just doesn't like. I haven't run into too many, but there are definitely ones, especially that have, you know, make heavy use of fancy JavaScript and all kinds of stuff like that, that just, it does make Safari crash. Try that reset Safari option I was talking about earlier, where you go under the Safari menu and say reset it.
Right.
Which, you know, that gets rid of your cache, it gets rid of all kinds of stuff, and sometimes that will make it a little bit happier. It doesn't get rid of your bookmarks, so your bookmarks are still there.
Okay.
So if I
reset Safari, I still have got the bookmarks. I just lose the cookies.
Right. You lose the cookies. You lose the history. You lose the cache. You lose any saved passwords. And any one of those items could be contributing to Safari's unstable behavior.
I see.
So it's worth a shot.
Okay.
And our computer wizard in our office did exactly what you're asking for on my computer in about 1 minute.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, it's very easy.
You shouldn't have any trouble doing it.
So I should go right to Google.
Oh, I was talking about resetting the.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Actually,
I
was talking about importing.
Oh, he was talking. Okay.
He did it in about a minute.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, that's why, when you have somebody like you around in your office, you don't learn as much as you probably should because it's a lot easier to say, Joe or Jason, come here.
You know, and I've been running into this more and more, and I've been trying to take a little different tact. I've been trying to show people how to find the answers instead of just giving them the answers. And my mom is a great example. She'll always email me these questions, and I've been trying to kind of steer her towards, well, how can you find the answer? Because that way she'll remember not only where to find it, where to look for it again. And she has much better retention if she finds that answer herself. When you discover things, you have a much better chance of remembering it. And
yeah.
The best advice I think I ever gave my mom was, you won't hurt the computer. So go in there and press buttons and see what they do. Click on things, find out what happens, explore. It's a puzzle. Go see what all these little shiny things do. And just by virtue of pressing on buttons and watching what happens, you eventually start to figure out how they all work.
Thanks again, Bob. Appreciate it. Judy and Tomahawk, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Wonderful program. I'm glad somebody's doing something with the Macs. I have a question. I'm a longtime Mac user since the 80s. I ran a Mac lab, so I'm familiar with Mac OS X. I've been out of the education game now for a couple of years, so
okay.
I'm kind of lacking in the new platforms, especially the Intel Duo 2 processor with the Vista and the XP, and I want to buy a laptop so I'm mobile.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, I guess you can get two platforms. You can get Vista or you can get XP as far as the Windows side.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of one or over the other. That's question number one. And question number two, if you've got the Windows platform, are you going to be plagued by all the viruses, and hence do you have to buy all the security software to go along with that?
Okay. Well, let me tackle that first one. I'm assuming you're talking about buying a Mac laptop so you have your familiar Apple platform, and then with the new chips, you have the option of running Windows as well.
Correct.
Am I right on that one? Okay.
Yes.
And then, if I understand your question correctly, you're wondering, well, is it better to have, as the second platform, is it better to have Windows Vista or Windows XP?
Yes.
And, you know, if you ask 10 different people, you'll get 10 different answers, which is surprising. There's only two products. I personally steer towards XP. And the reason is most applications are compatible with XP.
Okay.
And every once in a while, you run into something that's not compatible with Vista. So you're getting Windows on your Macintosh for the point of being able to run all of these other programs that aren't available for the Mac. So why not pick the operating system that has the most coverage?
Okay.
So, you know, my hunch would be, my preference, and this is what I have on my machine, is I have Parallels, which allows me to run both simultaneously.
Right.
Which is incredibly handy. It doesn't do games very well, but I don't play games.
Right. I don't either.
So I would get Parallels and a copy of Windows XP.
Okay.
Now, the second question is, are you, with Windows XP, are you opening yourself up to all of these Windows viruses? And the answer is yes.
Okay.
You absolutely are. This is a full, when Windows is running on the new Macs, it is a full installation of Windows. It's like having a second machine there. And all the things that you would be susceptible to with a Windows machine sitting next to your laptop is now on your laptop.
Okay.
Haven't heard much about it actually infecting or doing anything to the Mac itself, but you do run the risk of, you know, what's going on inside of that Windows environment causing problems for the Windows environment. So I would absolutely have, you know, anti-spyware and antivirus on that and make sure that you keep that Windows installation up to date.
Okay. So the Mac side wouldn't be affected if you did have a virus on the Windows side?
Generally speaking, not.
Okay.
So there are some places where they do share some files back and forth, and those files could potentially be deleted by the PC side, but it's not going to, you know, inject a virus into your Mac that now when the PC side is turned off is still affecting your Mac. No.
Okay. Great. And one more question. This is I used to do rebuilding the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Is that no longer do that with the newer versions?
There actually is no desktop to rebuild.
Okay.
Apple has changed the file structure significantly. The desktop used to be a very, very important database that kept track of where all the files were and who they belonged to and how they got opened. And Mac OS X doesn't use that anymore.
Okay.
And the new Intel Macs, because the older Macs, you could still do it because you could run Classic. But the new Intel Macs will not run Classic, so there's no need to even have that function around.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Wonderful.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Joe and Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hi there. I don't own a computer, but I wanted to buy one, and I'm uncertain as to whether to get a Mac or a PC type.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do you plan to use it, Joe?
email, internet.
Sure. Okay. Do you have some family members or friends you want to kind of stay in touch with?
And sure.
Okay.
Send pictures, maybe.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you know, this I keep dragging my mom back into the show, and I forgot to tell her I was on today. So she's not listening. I'm safe. You know, this sounds a lot like where my mom was. She wanted to learn how to use it, kind of figure it out, and then she started doing things like email and keeping touch with friends, and now she's on to digital photography, and she's emailing photos, and I get lots of emails or photos of my nephews. My suggestion, and of course you're asking, you know,
a Mac guy.
You're asking a Mac guy, so you're gonna get a Mac answer. But here's where I have run into this. The Mac does not have as many viruses or other nasty software around there as the PC does. And what I've run into is PC users who are new, they're fighting an uphill battle because they're also dealing with viruses and spyware and bizarre things happen. Not necessarily that they caused or that they didn't realize they caused. And so there's a little bit more confusion in that platform because you have some of these other things and you have, you know, antivirus software by its definition is very intrusive. It needs to be to do what it needs to do. So my suggestion would be to get yourself an inexpensive Mac. Make sure it has Mac OS 10. I think it's a bit more discoverable than PCs are. I mean, Apple worked very, very hard to make sure that you could kind of, you know, follow the big flashy blue buttons and it would probably do the right thing. I think their help messages are a little bit better. I think their help system is a little bit better. And I think the error messages are a little bit more friendly. But more than anything, you don't have to worry quite as much about going to the wrong website and suddenly having a virus. Whereas on a PC, it's a little bit more of a concern. And you don't have to worry so much about your antivirus program constantly popping up an error message. Now, I can almost see my email box filling up with Windows people saying, but, you know, this is not the way. So I give this with a grain of salt because I'm a Mac guy. But that's what I did with my mom, and I think it was a smart move because her friends who are on PCs are dealing with these kind of issues, and she's not.
Would you recommend a laptop over a desktop?
You know, that is going to depend a lot on how you're using it. The laptops are really nice because you can carry it over to someone else's house. You can take it to a restaurant or a coffee shop, and that's really nice. But the price that you pay for that portability is the screens are smaller, and they're not quite as fast as the desktop machines. You know, for about the same money as you'd get Apple's entry-level laptop, you get their entry-level desktop, the iMac. And that iMac has a 20-inch screen. I was in front of one today. They're beautiful. And, you know, you watch a movie on this or you look at your photos and they're just dazzling. But you can't pick it up and throw it in your bag and
carry it somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a trade-off, you know, how do you think you're going to use it? And I realize since you don't have a computer, that's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd want to use it, you know, in the future sometime.
Well, start with a desktop.
Yeah, I would say start with a desktop because it's going to be, you know, bigger, faster, better. And then as you realize, wow, this is really nice and I would love to take these photos and show them to people, you know, at my neighbor's house or my kid's house or whatever you happen to be, then you can start looking at a laptop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Mark in West Allis, we turn to you. Hi, Mark.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Yeah, great show. Just to preface, I do have a problem, a small one, but I wanted to mention that after years of problems with PCs last March, I have two kids, and we decided to go the Mac route. And I did get the exact system you just talked about. It's the 20-inch iMac.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it. We started with a little iPod with my sister, like my daughter, and it went to the Mac, and now I bought myself an iPod. So, I mean, we're just Apple freaks now. So it's great. Everything's working really well, except the funniest thing happened this weekend.
Okay.
I was on vacation, came back, and I don't know what my daughter did to it. She's real good. The kids love it. But when I go to scroll... Mm-hmm. Up and down on a website or anywhere, it won't scroll down. It only scrolls up. I have to go to the bar on the right to pull my screens up and down. Is that something I can work on myself, or do I got to call someone?
Well, what probably happened, and this happens to me all the time, you've got the little Mighty Mouse with that little ball on top of it?
Yes, correct. Yep.
That little ball is incredibly sensitive to dirt.
Oh, very good. Okay.
And what happens, because you spend most of your time rolling down, the dirt kind of gets jammed in the down direction and not in the up.
Okay.
So what you can do is you can take some compressed air,
okay,
and you can try and blow into that ball. It's really hard to get that cleaned out. And honestly, from a design standpoint, Apple needs to work on that.
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because okay. they don't. You can't take it apart easily. You can, and if you Google around, you will find directions for it, but it does involve some heavy labor, and when you're done, you have to use some glue to put it back together, because they glued it together. You can take it apart, and you can clean off the little rollers, and it'll work brilliantly after that, and then you have it, you know, kind of Frankenstein glued back together.
Or
get a different mouse, depending upon how, you know, if and here's the, are you a laptop or desktop? Your desktop.
Yeah, so, we have a desktop. I have the exact same thing you mentioned with the beautiful screen and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I would try, you know, see if you can take some compressed air, clean that little guy out, and, you know, I've gone through three of these mice, and I love them, but I am so irritated with that little ball, because when it doesn't work, it's very frustrating.
It goes up just fine, but like you said, since you're always scrolling, that's probably what's happening.
Just doesn't go down. And so at some point, you might choose to get a different mouse that has a more standard wheel that doesn't get gummed up as quickly.
Can you use the mouse that just uses a little light under it?
Yeah, these are optical mice.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. Oh, but...
Yeah, mine does that now.
Yeah, there's a tiny little ball, kind of a little trackball.
Yeah.
But it's very, very small, and it looks great, and it works great until it gets...
gummed up.
You know what happens for me is I eat soy nuts, and the little things get stuck on my fingers, and instantly that causes this problem. And I curse myself every time I do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thanks. How much does a new mouse cost?
If you get the Apple one, it's about $50-$60, but you can buy any USB mouse for a Mac. And it'll work. You know, if you've got a standard Logitech two-button mouse with a scroll wheel, you just plug it in and it works. And you can get those for, I don't know, probably $15 or $20 if you shop around.
Yeah.
So any USB mouse will work with a Mac.
Mark in Fort Atkinson, on to you. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I have an old iMac, still chugging along nicely. And I found the hard drive was a bit small, so I bought an external hard drive.
Okay.
And I was just wondering... When I put the computer to sleep, the hard drive does not sleep. And I'm wondering if there's a way to get that. It's like a third-party hard drive. If there's any way to get that to sleep, because it keeps spinning and it's got these lights that glow all night, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It depends a lot on who made the hard drive.
Oh.
LaCie, they've got some pretty intelligent drives, and they actually turn their drives off when they're not being used. And... So then when you do click on the hard drive, even if your computer's not asleep, the drive will go to sleep, and then you click on the hard drive and you have to wait for it to spin up. But it's kind of nice because it's not running 24 hours a day. Some of the other ones, they don't necessarily do that, and it's really hit or miss depending upon who made the drive. You might be able to go to the manufacturer's website. Like, let's say it's a Western Digital or a Seagate or something like that. Whoever made, you know, whoever's got the brand name on the outside of the box, and see if they have some utility software. And see if they've got something where you can control when it's running and when it's not. But my hunch is they, you know, very few of them do.
Yeah, it's kind of a drag, but I'll give that a try.
Okay. All right.
All right, thanks.
Yep, thanks, Mark. Kitty in Mineral Point, hi to you.
Well, hi, and thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Sure.
I have a iBook G4. It's about 3 years old.
Okay.
I'm in 10.3.9.
Okay.
And recently, I have developed this little problem. I like to share photographs through iPhoto.
Okay.
And I usually go to the share and go to the email share.
Okay.
And recently, when I do that, my emails come back unable to be sent. Now, I can use my Mac.com account just to send emails,
mm-hmm.
but when I am doing it through iPhoto, they're coming back to me. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Sure. In that that error message that you get back that says, I couldn't deliver this message,
mm-hmm.
Does it give you any explanation, like sender address doesn't work, or the receiving mail server rejected it? Or usually they give you some text that says, here's why I won't send your mail.
Well, I guess it does, and I can't recall, but I know it's not the address.
Okay.
The receiver address, because then I send that person an email saying, are you getting these pictures from me? Obviously, I know they're not, but
sure.
I'm checking, you know, to see that the email works.
Right.
Well, I think that you're probably a unlikely victim of the spam war. Chances are the person you're sending this mail to, their service provider, the people that run their mail server,
mm-hmm.
are blocking your message because it looks a little bit like spam or it's too large. So the first thing you can do is try sending an individual picture.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to that share option, go for the small size, because I think they give you a drop-down menu.
Yep.
Where you can pick small,
yep,
medium, large, or full,
mm-hmm,
size.
Mm-hmm.
And go with one picture and do the small size and,
mm-hmm,
see if that goes through first.
Okay.
Because a lot of mail systems, they will only accept a message up to a certain size. And it could be that, you know, it depends on who the mail server is. It's not even consistent. It could be a megabyte. It could be 5 megabytes. It could,
mm-hmm,
be 10. And pictures, you know, they if you put 4 pictures on there, it can really quickly add up.
Oh, sure.
So you can try sending one through and see if that works any better.
Okay.
The other thing that happens is if you send only a picture and you,
mm-hmm,
don't put any text in there,
mm-hmm,
that's a trick that spammers use. And so more often that is starting to get blocked.
Okay.
So what you might want to do is put some text and say, hey, it's me, it's Kitty, and here's,
mm-hmm,
my picture from my vacation, blah, 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 blah.
Right, right.
So that when the spam filter looks at it, it has something else but the picture to look at and make a decision on.
Okay. Okay. I usually do include a message, but I will try the smaller size. And
try one at a time and then try two at a time and see at what point it starts to break, because my hunch is it's probably getting rejected because it looks like spam.
And
right.
Another way, isn't there another way to do it, literally putting your pictures up on a blog site or something like that?
Yeah. You can use, there's some free sites like Flickr where you can post your pictures up there. If you want to do it the really easy way is you have a .Mac account.
Mm-hmm.
Which integrates really nicely with iPhoto, and now the new iPhoto, they have some brilliant photo sharing techniques where you can just make some really nice online photo galleries.
Right. Yeah.
But you pay $100 a year for that service.
Right.
But when you do that, you've got one button. You can just send all your photos up to .Mac, and then,
mm-hmm,
you can just email a link to your .Mac account to the people who want. And that way they don't have to download then all those pictures. They can just go to the link, they can click on it, and it pulls up in their web browser.
Yeah, that's another really, really good idea. Before I let you off the line, I have one other issue.
Yeah.
When I pull up Safari,
mm-hmm,
when I'm, just getting started, I get a message that says Safari can't find server, and my HTTP number is gone. I press OK, and I'm in.
Okay.
So, I don't know why I'm getting this message. It's not terribly debilitating, but...
Chances are that it's trying to load a home page,
mm-hmm,
and for whatever reason, that home page isn't working properly.
Okay.
So it may be that it's a home page from a long time ago that doesn't exist anymore or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
What you can do is, in the Safari program, go to the Safari menu,
mm-hmm,
and pull down Preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And in there'll be a couple icons across the top. One will say General, and there's a spot there where you can tell it what home page you want.
Mm-hmm.
I have mine set to nothing because I want a blank page, and then I,
mm-hmm,
choose where I go. But let's say you always go to Google or you go,
mm-hmm,
to CNN.com. You can type in whatever you want your home page to be.
Okay.
And see if, my guess is you probably got something in there that isn't working properly. And if you change it to something that does or,
mm-hmm,
to nothing, that you'll get around that error.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for your help.
Paul in Hexton, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm just calling with a little solution for the gentleman that called about his Mighty Mouse.
Yeah.
I had this exact same thing and was very frustrated with it, and then went on to Apple's website to support, and they have a solution on there that worked very well for me, and that is that it says to use a clean, lint-free cloth that's,
mm-hmm,
lightly moistened with water.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says if the scrolling feels rough or if the scroll ball isn't scrolling up, down, or side to side, you hold the mouse upside down and roll the ball vigorously while cleaning it with that cloth to dislodge any particles. And I've done that a couple times, and it works great.
Oh, fantastic. I've had that happen, too, and I tried it, but I think whatever I happened to have, those soy
those
nut
nuts.
Husks, yeah, they went too far up there, and that didn't work, so I ended up the much more harsh solution. But thanks for the tip.
That's a good tip, and I'm sure there'll probably be a few of those trackballs turned upside down within a matter of a few minutes. Thanks, Paul. Thanks very much. And Joe, thank you so much.
You
Boy,
bet.
It's been a great pleasure, and we'll look forward to your next visit.
Yeah, if anybody needs to, I've got some tips up on my blog. It's joerodes.com/WPR.
Joe Rhodes, and Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S, joerodes.com/WPR.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.
Joe, thanks again very much. Really appreciate your being with us today.
Thank you.
Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been supporting Max a long time, as you can tell, because he's got great answers to those questions. And we'll certainly welcome him back again for another crack at the microphone, and you'll have a chance to ask your questions. And take a look at his website, joerhodes.com/WPR. Get lots of good information there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the potential benefits and possible health and environmental concerns relating to nanotechnology. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.